This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
We're taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet in Seattle. Hey, Jet.
Woohoo, John. It's another big banner day in Jetdom. Woody's back.
I know, isn't that great? Gotta love that.
Woody's back. We're going to win. Boy, the man that brought you, John Idzik, is now back in town, and we couldn't be more excited.
Oh, you got to love this. I mean, and plus now it's like to say that the Jets are the worst organized team in football, you got the Houston Texans now topping them.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard mention of that last hour, and I appreciate the shout-out. And, you know, it just warms the cuckles of my heart to know that not only did we lose Trevor Lawrence, so we're number two in the draft, but we are now number two in incompetence in the NFL.
I know. Isn't that great?
We're climbing up the ladder, John.
I know. We're just like the winless season turned into a two-win season.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we couldn't be more proud of it. Those are two big wins, two important wins, you know, and it's just going to help build the franchise for the next decade.
I know. How long do you think it's going to take for Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas to get this team to be competitive and maybe be a winning team?
I think we're going to see improvement next year in 2021, but I don't think you're going to see anything really substantive until 2022, and I think that's when they're going to start really pulling it together. I think, you know, they're going to have, you know, two big draft classes, hopefully successful, on top of what they pulled together this year. And it's going to be interesting to see what they pull in, if anything, in free agents. I wonder how many 49ers are going to come east. But I don't expect Joe Douglas to really go hog wild in free agency. That's just not the Ozzie Newsome way. I'm going to be interested to see how many of his guys this year he keeps. I really hope they keep Marcus May. Not just for talent purposes, but because he seems to be a big leader in that clubhouse. And when he came out and called and said the emperor had no clothes when Greg Williams had his moment of glory, and he just came out and said it, I think that was a real big statement in that clubhouse. And I think that I really hope they keep him for the leadership, if nothing more. As far as that, I'm not sure. You know, maybe Brian Poole they'll bring back. I don't know if they're going to bring back Jordan Jenkins. I'm not sure he fits the scheme.
No. By the way, I did check. They are going to be a 4-3 defense.
Yeah, I saw that. And, you know, I don't think that's a real big problem in that they certainly have plenty of defensive tackles
right
for a 4-3. And we've been talking about that for years. They should have been doing that, you know, a long time ago. The problem is, I know he likes his edge rushers. And, you know, as far as, you know, defensive ends and outside linebackers, they're not there.
No,
and I'm not sure where they're going to get them either. So there's going to be a little problem there. So I don't know if it's just going to be a strict 4-3 this year, but it's going to be interesting to see and watch what they do. The other thing that's going to be interesting, I think they're going to play a lot more zone, and I think that could help the young kids back there. And I think between Bryce Hall and Bless Austin, I think you got a couple of kids on the come, and I think they will benefit, I think, from playing zone. So we'll see, but it's going to be interesting to watch how they develop that defense.
Yeah, but it's going to be pretty much the same scheme as the Seahawks. They'll add some things to it. You know, like, I don't know if they're going to be a little more wide nine as far as their defensive ends. It's going to be cover one. It's going to be cover three. And, you know, again, it's going to be very similar to what Seattle has. It's also going to be interesting to see, you know, would he be looking at any of the Seattle players to bring in too, because they would fit the scheme.
That's interesting. And, you know, Carlos Dunlop could be an interesting addition to that particular scheme in that franchise. The other thing you got to remember, and there was some, I saw Costello wrote about it this week in the Post. Don't forget, Mosley's coming back.
Right.
And the good question is, what are you going to do with him in this scheme? Because I'm not so sure he's necessarily built either for the scheme as a sideline-to-sideline guy or not in the middle. So might they move him to one of the side linebackers and perhaps try to bring somebody in, or maybe Neville Hewitt in the middle? I don't know, but it's going to be interesting to see how that Mosley thing plays out.
Oh, agreed. Yeah, because, again, $17 million, and he's barely played in 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, opted out.
He can't go anywhere.
No.
His cap hits are too big. in 21 and 22. So he's on the roster, at least for the next 2 years.
Right.
Because they just can't cut him. The dead money is just prohibitive.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So they've got to do something with him. So it's going to be interesting to see how they integrate him into the system. So I'm not entirely sure we're going to see an exact replica or clone of what they do here in Seattle, because they just don't have the Bobby Wagner or KJ Wright on that lineup, and I don't know where they're going to find them. And they don't have the outside pass rusher, so it's going to be interesting to see what they do.
Mm-hmm. No, it is. But at least there's some better hope, because I think that Saleh was one of the better hires that was done this year among the seven teams that looked for head coaches, so I thought that was encouraging.
Well, what do you think about, and this, I'm personally happy about this. I know we've talked about it a little bit. The change of structure in that they find, you know, theoretically, the Johnsons are going to stop meddling, and Saleh is answerable to Douglas instead of they being like a bifurcated power system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately that could help things. And I don't think you're going to see a potential power play like we did certainly with Gaze and the struggles that we saw with Izik and Ryan. And I think that has the potential of putting everybody on the same page finally. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not the normal structure where you have the coach reporting to the GM, the GM reporting to the owner. And, you know, say what you want about Douglas. I mean, again, he did well in the draft. It's a bad team because there's no talent. But, he did a good job there. But you're right. It's like he's not a big spender, which that's not necessarily a bad thing. But you just have to take the long approach to trying to build the team up, particularly through the draft. Hey, Jet, thank you for the phone call.
Take care, John, and enjoy the weekend.
Okay, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Colin in Bonnie Lake. Hey, Colin.
Hey, what's up, Professor?
How's it going? Good.
Oh, hanging in there. I'm heading down to golf, but Coug, so I'm a little biased. But I think Gardner Minshew got a raw deal in Jacksonville this year, just how they used him. I feel like he could be kind of a low-cost trade target for, you know, Colts, Patriots, Rams, something like that. What do you think?
Yeah, and it would be like a seventh-round pick or something like that. He's not going to be expensive. But I do think he got a raw deal, particularly, you know, he fought through COVID and he came back and then they just took away his job for no reason, giving it to Mike Glennon. And I never understand, even through college and in the pros, what anybody sees in Mike Glennon. You know, obviously it cost the job at North Carolina State of the head coach who let Russell Wilson go to Wisconsin. And then you see him bring in the pros. I mean, it was a disaster in Chicago. You know, Doug Marrone was going to get fired anyways, but then he lets Glennon go the rest of the season, which I just say, why?
Yeah, I don't – it's not like Minshew's just great or anything. He doesn't have a lot of arm strength, but he's kind of got some mobility. He's got some moxie. I just feel like he was a good fit for that team, just where they were going, and they just totally screwed him over. So I'd like to see him get a shot with somebody to start, because he's a lot better than some of the starters out there.
Yeah, I mean, he did some good numbers. I mean, the only thing that you don't know, and part of it's because of the bad team that he was on, how he can do against winning teams. Because I think, he's only had like one or two wins against teams with winning records. And so it was one thing to be able to go against a bad team and do some good things, but he still needs to show that he can win against good teams.
Oh, so he's the weak-armed Matthew Stafford then, huh? Can't beat good teams.
Yeah. Well, Matthew does have that kind of a reputation, even though he's got the strong arm.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking my call, John. I'm hoping Minshew gets the shot.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We are here till 11 o'clock, Seattle Sports Saturday coming up after that. And then, of course, Dave Grosby joining us at 10:30. But we are taking your phone calls till 11, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's a busy week in the National Football League, not just from the standpoint that you got the championship games on this weekend, but just from the standpoint that a lot of the coaching things started to fall in. But again, the embarrassing part for the National Football League, no black head coaches hired so far. And It's getting scary in the sense that, you know, I think that there's a little bit more of a move to get some coordinators that are black or minorities. That's good. But need to get some head coaches because there's only two right now in the National Football League. And so, you know, the Rooney Rule, even though there's, you know, the chance to get some extra draft choices and everything else if you, you know, with the team that loses the coach. But no, this to me, that Eric Bieniemy didn't get a job is bad, that Marvin Lewis didn't get a job is bad. And, you know, we'll see how these coaches do that have been hired, but not a good situation because, again, it's like they're trying their best, but it's not working as far as the head coaches. Now, again, we still have one opening. That's the Houston Texans. You know, they are talking to Leslie Frazier, who's a defensive coordinator in Buffalo, Eric Bieniemy, Jim Caldwell. But yesterday threw everything for a loop when all of a sudden Josh McCown's name came in. And the thought down there is that he might be a favorite for the job, which I just find to be incredible because he's never coached. It's like, how can you do that? And so that, to me, is a real bad thing. But, you know, we'll see ultimately, you know, where things go. But, yeah, it's just very, very strange. And, again, we're taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Corey in Puyallup. Hey, Corey.
How you doing, Professor?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Just looking for a little prediction this weekend, and I got another question right after. I personally think the Bills and I got the Packers.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I still think Kansas City at home, that's a tough out.
I think Buffalo just, I don't know, something magical about them this year. I personally got them winning it all. I don't know. For some reason, I'm just nothing. You know what they say, nobody circles wagons like the Bills.
Yeah, that's true. But
and the second question is, I know it's kind of out of there, but what if Bieniemy comes to Seattle?
What's that?
What if Bieniemy comes to Seattle? I mean, it's kind of an out of there, out of the market Seattle signing, but I mean, if you look at it, he could really open this offense up, even with the run game.
He could, but again, it's like I don't know if they would let him have a lateral move like that because
I mean, if the Seahawks could personally poach him away, I mean, Seattle's a great place, and he could get away from Andy Reid, which everyone kind of says runs that show up there. So
yeah, but he really likes Andy Reid, and they really like him. I know that they have Mike Kafka on the staff.
But another thing is, however he's interviewing there, people think Andy Reid's running the show or he's not really the guy doing everything that's saying being done. So maybe if he comes to Seattle and gets a new change of fresh start and not under Andy Reid's offense, you know, maybe he could finally boost himself up for the head coaching job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I know.
I personally like Peterson, but he's not coaching this year, so I guess we'll see.
Yeah, no, that's sad because I think he would have been the best fit because he really could.
I personally could see the guy from the Raiders coming in here too and just
Kirby Wilson. Yeah.
All right. Well, have a good weekend, JC. I appreciate everything.
All right. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, they got to get this thing resolved here. I think early in the week because you know at this stage, you know it's. You know, they're going to start losing the competition. Now, again, you want to make the right choice. That's pretty evident. But also, you want to, you know, get the guy that Russell Wilson's going to be respecting and all that stuff. That I think is going to be a very important part of this. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting because, you know, it has gone on a long way. They've talked to a lot of people. Joe Lombardi, you know, Vince Lombardi's grandson is now they're talking to him. He's with the New Orleans Saints. And so we'll see if that can be a fit. But overall, it's been interesting to see. They definitely want to run the football. They don't want to be a 60-40 pass-to-run team like they were last year. And, you know, where people like to see let Russ cook and all that stuff, I think that they really do need to try to go ahead and get back to, you know, 45-46% run and 54% pass because it just puts too much pressure on Russell and it leads to the possibility of turnovers. And that's the big thing is Pete Carroll preaches, if you lose the turnover battle, you lose the game. And I think that they need to find a way to be able to, you know, fix that up. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Ah, thank you.
Hey, a couple quick things. Do you know a commentator by the name of Albright, Ben? I think his name is Benjamin Albright.
I do not know him, no.
Okay, I know he's mostly out of Denver, and I think he does some stuff for Cleveland, but I know he has his radio show in Denver. He's been stating almost half the season that there's not a big swell of support for Eric Bieniemy in the behind the scenes with a lot of the coaches and a lot of the general managers and stuff. He said that a lot of the swell is mostly media as opposed to actual people being excited about him being a coach.
Well, the one thing, and I know this is talking to coaching agents, when you have as many interviews as he's had and don't get a job, that's got to be a little concerning, because I don't know if it's a bad interview or anything like that. But, I know that he's respected in Kansas City, and I was a little surprised that the Chargers weren't a little bit more aggressive in doing something. You know, they were going to wait for Brian Daboll, because Brian Daboll went to the same high school as the general manager, Tom Telesco, and they actually played on the same football team together. I know that Telesco was 2 years behind, but they wanted to make that hire and make it now, and so there was no waiting for it. But I just think it's so disappointing that, you know, Eric, you know, hasn't gotten the job, because, again, I thought he was going to be one of the main guys.
Yeah, about halfway through the season, he started, Albright started putting on Twitter and also on his show that Bieniemy, he's a lot more popular amongst just fans, mm-hmm. you know, people like me, as opposed to people that are actually in the business and in managing stuff. Hey, how do you think the Bronco ownership's going to turn out?
Hard to tell. I mean, I think it's going to stay with the current group that is running things. But, you know, like anything else, this is a lawsuit and anything can happen. But it's a messy situation. I guess we'll start July, I guess, is when the trial is going to start. And so we'll start to see where it goes then. How do you see it breaking up?
Well, I know they want Brittany Bolin to take over, but I think her brothers and sisters, they really don't want that. So they said they're not signing off on it, and they'd prefer them to sell the team as opposed to let Brittany take over, which is a drive, because I like to see the Broncos being owned by Bolin. But this also from a radio show in Denver. They were saying that it's kind of like a black eye on the NFL that Denver doesn't have an owner. Is it really seen that way, or is it more of just let Denver handle whatever business they need to do and then...
No, I mean, you got to let the team work out its own problems, because, again, it's like, you know, the league can't take over and shouldn't take over. And, you know, that's the thing that, you know, which I think is still a good thing in the NFL, because, and, you know, how long that can continue, you don't know. But you want to keep it in the families, because, again, they don't want to have corporations involved. You know, they don't want it to be like some of the other sports. They want, you know, family ownership. But, of course, when you're now talking about, you know, $3-4 billion entities on these franchises, it's, you know, that narrows the number of people that can come in and buy these franchises. But I think if you can keep it, you know, within the family system and, you know, have it carry down, you know, a couple generations, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Now, does that affect any decisions the NFL has over Denver, since they don't have a one singular owner as of?
No, because, okay, again, it's like They have enough leadership right now with John Elway and Joe Ellis. And remember, Joe Ellis worked in the league office. And so I think they still feel good about that. And, you know, it's still a well-run franchise from the standpoint. Maybe they haven't been able to figure out the right quarterback situation. But, you know, again, you saw the situation. It took forever, but they finished it up in Tennessee. And they finally got everything worked out there, and with one-third ownership going to one of the Adams daughters. But, no, I think, you know, it's like, the great part about the NFL is that the league is so successful monetarily that you can do that. I mean, you can have the battles and stuff of that nature, but in the end, you just want to make sure that, you know, you can do it. But again, the money right now, even though it's not good this year because of the pandemic, is good enough to make things work out.
All right, John. Hey, bud, you're the best part of 221, John. You take care, bud.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ed in Denver. Hey, Ed.
Good morning, JC.
Good morning, Ed.
Happy Saturday to you and your wife.
Well, thank you. Happy Saturday to you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we continue the 8 months of anguish with the Seahawks. Still wondering what's going to happen with the offensive coordinator. How good do you think Joe Lombardi would be?
I guess okay. I mean, you know, he's been around for some time now. He's worked under Sean Payton's system. And, you know, say what you want, Sean Payton is a big believer also in running the football. So along with, you know, he's got a great passing scheme and all those different things, but he's an interesting candidate. You know, it's just that, you know, what fits what Pete Carroll's looking for. And again, that's why I think, for example, it's not a good fit with Adam Gase, because he runs that Mike March system, and that's more passing the ball, and that's against the grain. But it's, everything I hear is Adam's probably going to sit out coaching this year. He's being paid by the Jets. But you kind of get the idea that, you know, whether it's Kirby Wilson, whether it's going to be Anthony Lynn, Joe Lombardi. I mean, the one real intriguing guy, I think, is going to be Mike Kafka. But again, I think everything is all set in Kansas City that he's ready to get some kind of a promotion. So that's all on the agenda. But I think ultimately, you know, they've got to make a decision here by the middle of this week, because I think it's going a little bit too long. You got to make the right decision. But then also, too, you know, is there any other candidates that are in the championship games that might be of interest to Pete Carroll?
Yeah, Eric Bieniemy, but he'd never make a lateral move like that.
Yeah, but here's what I'm wondering. Because I know Andy is really pushing for Eric to get the, you know, head coaching job, and that pretty well failed unless Houston hires him. But, you know, if indeed he's trying to move up some of his coaches, like a Mike Kafka, who's 33 years old, then maybe they might let Eric come over. Now, again, Eric, and again, this is becoming kind of crazy, but it's like, you know, Eric hasn't called plays. But, you know, Mike Sirianni, who went to Philadelphia, he hasn't called plays. You know, Arthur Smith, who went to Atlanta, he called plays. But it's like, you know, you're seeing so many of these jobs now, you know, going to guys who have never called plays, head coaching jobs. But, you know, at some point, and that's why what I'm hoping for, which, of course, it failed from the head coaching standpoint, is that you have more minority coordinators. And one thing that is happening, we're starting to see a little bit more of that, both on offense and defense. Who do you look at the landscape, who do you seem to have your most faith in as far as some of the people they're talking to?
Oh, I would say Doug Peterson, but it's too bad he's not going to coach, it sounds like.
Yeah,
but
sounds like it. He would be the best choice, without question.
He'd be the most innovative play caller of the people that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, we don't know if Joe Lombardi can actually call plays, because Sean Payton calls the plays in New Orleans.
Right, right. So, yeah, that's...
But I am so frustrated with their lack of innovation of play calls. You know, it's like I watched the Packers have that one play to Davante Adams at the goal line where they, you know, completely fooled the Rams, you know, and completely frustrated Jalen Ramsey. And it wasn't even all that, you know, innovative of a play. But yet it seems like the Seahawks are unable to have plays like that where the wide receivers get wide open, like happened in that particular case.
Yeah, but the big thing is, and that's the thing that I think everybody got caught up in, and you know, from the very beginning I was saying this, you know, my fear on the let Russ cook thing is that he ends up passing the ball too much and he ends up making turnovers. Well, that's exactly what ended up happening and eventually caught Brian Schottenheimer his job. I mean, if you're a Seattle, you can't pass the ball 60% of the time. I mean, because, again, you lead to the possibility if you pass the ball too much and your blocking breaks down or they blitz you or all those things. I mean, you either get a sack or you get a holding penalty or you get a turnover. And the turnovers are the things that, you know, did hurt this team. And, you know, I think still everybody's going through the overreaction of one real bad game against the Rams. At least the Rams kind of matched that by not playing their best football the next week. But, you know, I think that, you know, they have to find a way to run the ball and also have to make a decision on who's going to be the runners.
I mean, exactly the case. They have to be able to run the ball, but they have to be able to run it effectively.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you watch Green Bay run the ball. I mean, Aaron Jones does it so effectively, but it's not all Aaron Jones. It's the effectiveness of the Green Bay line. And there's a great game on NFL Network we played this week, the November 30th, 2014 game between the Packers and the Patriots. And it was interesting to watch, you know, Eddie Lacy was the running back then, and we all know that Eddie Lacy came to the Seahawks, and he wasn't nearly the back that he was at Green Bay. When you watch that game, you see the line open holes that I could run through and run, you know, 20 yards before anyone even touched me. I don't understand why our line can't do that.
Well, the line was better this year. I mean, that's the one thing.
Better, but still underachieved, I would say.
I wouldn't say underachieved. I mean, I think that they did better. I mean, you know, they won, particularly in pass-blocking situations, you know, 66% of their ball blocks, and that's much better than we've seen in the last couple of years. You know, clearly they have to figure out what to do at center if you're bringing Ethan Posick back. Also have to figure out who's going to be the left guard, because I can't imagine that Mike Iupati's going to be back. Because he just missed too much time with injuries. Thought Brandon Shell was a very good addition. What's that?
Who's going to be the running back, John? No,
nobody. Like, I mean, it depends. Carson. It's like, you know, the one thing that at least in their favor is that you look at it. You bring up Aaron Jones. There's like about eight running backs from that draft whose contracts are all up, and so there is a lot on the market, and you know. Maybe, and that'll bring down the value of maybe what a Chris Carson could get in free agency. And so maybe that gets him in a position to sign some kind of a 2-year deal. You know, ideally it'd be between $6 and $8 million. And if that's the case, you keep him, and then hope that Rashad Penny gets through all his knee problems and that, see about bringing Carlos Hyde back, maybe consider bringing Mike Davis back, who did well filling in for Christian McCaffrey in Carolina.
Of those choices, I like Mike Davis the best.
Mm-hmm. Mike's a good one, and of course, I don't think he's going to be able to command a lot of money in free agency. And you know, he liked it here because he came here after getting cut by San Francisco with a chip on his shoulder.
Absolutely, it really does look like Chris Carson is out, though, from what Danny was saying the other day about he's, you know, stopped following the Seahawks and Russ. Yeah. That seems like
that's not a good sign.
I'm out. Yeah, but I don't see how you can read that as any way other than he's out.
Yeah, but hey, like anything else, you're not out until you can find a job someplace else at the money that you want. And there's so much competition at the running back position that you don't know if that can happen. Hey, Ed, thank you for the phone call.
All right. Thank you, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rashid in Woodinville. Hey, Rashid.
Hey, Professor. Good morning, sir. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
Not bad. Just surviving through this pandemic.
Yeah. Surviving is a key word here.
Yes, I know it's been like almost like a year and stuff, but thank God for football.
It takes
it so much of this nervousness away and stuff, you know. So, for what the NFL did this year, really, really, like, gratitude to, like, all the people, Alan Sills, Roger Goodell. Like, I mean, pulling this was, like, an amazing, and people don't realize football was, like, a very, very good and interesting distraction and made us feel normal, you know, on Sundays and Saturdays and stuff. So, really thankful. Couple of questions, Professor. I know, like, the Hall of Fame week and stuff. If any player from Seattle is going up or Seahawks, is it you or Mike Sando who presents them to the panel?
Well, it used to be me, but now I'm an at-large, and so it would be Mike Sando that would do the presentation. Like, for example, you know, you figure the next possibility, you know, would be on the coaching category, Mike Holmgren. And so, you know, Mike then would speak in his behalf. Obviously, I would then come back and then, you know, add to it. But, you know, it would be the local person, you know, so you have 32 locals, and that would be Mike Sando. And so then there's 16 at large, and then, you know, we kind of oversee everything else.
Yeah, and talk about Mike Holmgren. Like, I don't know what he had to do, like, not to be in there, because people don't remember, like, he's the one who was the quarterback coach for Montana.
Yeah.
And then, like, two franchises, like, literally, like, changed their fortunes and stuff. Like, one Super Bowl win, one Super Bowl appearance and stuff. I'm not even sure, why, like, he... I know, like, the contributor and the coaches and stuff,
yeah.
But... Like I would have in there.
Well, the problem is that, you know, a coach going against a player is going to lose to the player. And that's why, for example, I was the one who was the main person trying to advocate that we have a coaches category, because I learned that from Will McDonough. And, you know, it took forever to do it, but they fortunately enough were able to do it. And this is the first year we've had the coaching category. And so it worked out. Of course, we were able to do that when we did the 100-year team and had two coaches, Jimmy Johnson and Bill Cowher, make it in. And so now we have Tom Flores this year. And then, you know, at least for three more years, we'll have a coaches category. And hopefully we do well enough that we can extend that. But, you know, now we can try to get some of the coaches in. But then what happens is, if you have a backlog, and you usually use either Tom Flores or Don Coryell that would make it. But then again, they're not going to win against going against players. Now, Tony Dungy fortunately was able to get in and make it through with his great success. But it's hard for a coach to make it if they're going against just players.
Yeah, that's true. And one thing, I know it's not popular these days, but I mean, like, sometimes I feel like the Seahawks fans, they're very passionate and stuff, and I am one of them. But, man, like, how they treat Pete Carroll, and, like, he just gets so much flack for, and, you know, for example, Kyle Shanahan, I know he's a great coach, like, great pedigree, great coach. But he did win only six games this year, but it feels like their six wins somehow are, like, more important than, like, the 12 wins and the division win that we had. And Pete never gets, like, credit for being the consistent winner and stuff. He was next, like, we're next to, like, New England in terms of wins and stuff. And somehow I feel that we don't really recognize, like, what Pete has done for this team on a consistent basis. 12 wins. Regardless, you run or pass and everything, 12 wins are 12 wins. A division win is a division win. I don't even know what we want from, like, our coaches. Like, is it Super Bowl or bust? No, it's not. But I want to stand up for Pete, because I think he's one of the best, like, if not the best coach, in my opinion. And what he did, no COVID test, no COVID positive this year and stuff, just installed the discipline and culture. And, like, I love all the coaches, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, but I will take Pete over them any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. He brings consistent winners out. Players like playing for him. Players like being with him. And so, no, I think it's a good thing, and you're probably right. I mean, there has to be a better appreciation of what Pete Carroll has meant to this franchise and what he's done in being able to have success. Hey, Rasheed, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you so much, sir.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dave in Denver. Hey, Dave.
Hey, good morning, Professor. How are we doing?
Good. How are you?
Just another day in paradise, cold paradise down here.
I know.
Hey, kind of piggybacking off of that last call, talking about putting the kind of proper respect on Pete Carroll's name, I think the same goes for Chris Carson, and this is just before I forget it. I think the perfect fit for him is in San Diego, in L.A. with the Chargers. So just before I forget that.
Okay.
Anyway, hey, and then talking about your earlier caller there who is complimenting Green Bay's offensive line and kind of asking, you know, in terms of what do the Seahawks need, is that what we need to look at? Well, I mean, you go back and you take a look at week six when the Buccaneers' defense absolutely obliterated that offensive line of Green Bay. They ran around all day long. And so I think if you ask me what we need in Seattle is more speed, especially on that defensive line. Maybe it's just a Todd Bowles thing, sending in so many blitzes or whatever. I don't know, but those guys were fast, and they made them turn the ball over. And I don't know why there's not enough respect being put on Tampa Bay. They haven't lost since the bye week, so that's just my two cents.
Yeah, but also the Packers won 13 games. Aaron Rodgers threw 48 touchdown passes in what was his best season.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm not trying to discredit Aaron Rodgers in this resurgent season. It's quite impressive. I just think that if you go take a look at the game that they've already played head to head, we've already kind of seen what can happen, or what, you know, not necessarily what's going to happen, but definitely what can happen. And that, to tell you the truth, that's really what I want to see in Seattle, is that lightning speed on defense again. Mm-hmm. Seems like it's been lacking for a couple of years.
Well, I think that they're now addressing that, because they got good speed in Jordan Brooks. You can see that they added some elements at the defensive end position for pass rush. I mean, they've got good speed in the secondary. But again, the big thing, I know the theme this year for the defense was more speed and more violence. They wanted more violent-type hitting. You can see Jamal Adams has great speed, and you can see they have good speed at the cornerback position. And, they're going with Bobby Wagner still has good speed. K.J. Wright's solid. But, Jordan Brooks was the one addition that really, along with Jamal Adams, that did add more speed. But, hey, like anything else, you want to continue to add more speed.
Oh, absolutely, John. And you know, I really think that Bobby Wagner is completely underappreciated. I mean, the man had 16 tackles in that Rams game. I mean, he's a one-man show.
No doubt. Hey, Dave, thank you for the phone call.
Thanks, John.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.